What's up, y'all? This is Master Ace, executive producer of this podcast. Coming up next, an all-new episode of Lachey Show.
Let's start. We starting.
We already started.
I know we started.
You in here wrecking shit.
All right, go ahead. Do your normal thing. Welcome to the Lachey Show. It's a pleasure. It's an honor. You know how you do. Go ahead. Don't worry about me. Look at this. Your people is on.
Relax.
Okay, go ahead.
Welcome everybody to the Lachey Show. Oh my God. Yeah. As you can see, I got a very, very special individual in the basement today. And when I say special, I mean special.
What's poppin', yo?
I got DJ Mr. C, Brooklyn's Bed-Stuy own.
Uh-huh. That's me. The finisher.
Is in the basement today. What up, Calvi?
Now you want to call me by my government.
I didn't say your government. I said Calvi. For everybody who don't know, DJ Mr. C has several AKAs to us, okay? It's DJ Mr. C, a.k.a. Calvi. DJ Mr. C, a.k.a. Scott Billion. It's been years for that one, huh? DJ Mr. C is a.k.a. Mr. Throwback at Noon.
No more. Don't throw that in
no,
there.
No, listen.
That's old news. That's
I don't
old
care.
News.
It doesn't matter. You got to own it. It was a part of your history. The Nasty African, that's old too, but it still exists.
Oh, God.
The Finisher, right?
Yeah.
And one of my personal favorites, The Wallop King.
Yeah?
Yeah,
that is I.
Matter of fact, I got one a little bit more, more favorite than The Wallop King. The King of the Cheeseburger. Everybody else give a round. Let everybody give a round of applause for DJ Mr. C. is in the building. Am I missing anything, Sam?
Yeah, you're missing something. You ain't do like you did with everybody. It's a pleasure and an honor. You ain't give me one of those.
Be easy, brother.
You ain't give me one of those.
Yo, let me tell you something.
Be a little sting. Let me walk away from this interview.
Listen, I don't have to say it's a pleasure and an honor for you to be here because you're here quite often, first of all. Yes. So this is not anything that
I eat here a lot right. In the Orange basement.
Anyway, welcome my brother to the Lachey Show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, you're full of shit. I was actually
we really should tell the people that's
listen,
watching.
Relax.
Hold the tail.
No.
We really
hold
should
the
tell the people. What? No. The people really need to know. The people really need to know. Yeah. This is gonna be a doozy, y'all, because you know me and Shay, we have like over 20 years of friendship. So, you know,
this interview
is going to be a doozy because, you know, she's been wanting to do this for a minute.
We've been
waiting for the right time to do it. So today is the right time, right?
Okay. I was about to say before you took the words out of my mouth.
Because people got
to
know the history.
Oh my God.
Okay, go ahead.
Do I come in your booth when you're running records?
You're absolutely right.
I don't do that, right?
You're right.
So anyway, I was actually about to say that I was saving this interview with you because of the specialness of you.
Specialness?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that a word?
Yeah. It's one that I created just now.
Okay, great.
So it will be one today.
All right. Okay.
And being that you have, you know, you got a special birthday coming up. You know, you're about to be half of a century. You had over 30 years of DJing genius that you've given to our culture. I felt that it was only right that we take care of this sooner than later.
Okay.
You understand? So that's why the time is now.
Okay. I'm with you so far.
So far, I'm with you.
All right. I know this is going to be a doozy.
Awesome. So anyway, welcome. And before we even get into anything, I just want to ask you, do you realize that you're a living legend?
No.
You don't realize that?
Absolutely not.
Well, whether you realize it or not, being that you've been in this industry for over 30 years.
That's how long it's been?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people, including myself, know you as one of the best DJs in this industry. You appear to be a little modest here. You don't feel
absolutely.
That you...
I mean, you know, No, I'm not modest. No? I think I'm one of the best.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, own it. No. Own it. I mean, I'm talking about like killing parties, clubs. Your music catalog is beyond extensive. Mm. I mean, I'm speaking for myself right now, but I've been to many of your parties. I've been to many parties, period, and I've never ever experienced like a real genuine good time like when I go to your party. Like, your catalog is ridiculous. It could be, you know, the I wanna thank you, whatever it is, to that, to gritty, grimy hip hop, to R&B. You got freaking TV shows for days. Like, I think it's pretty incredible. And I mean, I'm not saying this because you're my brother, but I'm just saying this is because I'm actually a fan. You know what I'm saying? Because you've been doing your thing and I'm proud of that. And I just wanted to let you know.
I'm not gonna cry yet, y'all.
No, not yet?
No, not yet.
All right.
But I appreciate the
truth?
Compliment.
All right. So your resume overall is pretty ridiculous. Okay. Not only are you a DJ, but you're a radio personality. Ding. You're a former A&R. You're a music producer, uh-huh. Which people don't know.
I dabbled in it.
So that means that you did it, right? Yeah,
I've done it.
And I hope, actually, to add to your resume, at one point that you will put author. Because, in my opinion, I think that you have a pretty amazing story. And it's not done.
Yeah, you're right, it's not
done. You're right?
Done.
You know what I'm saying?
You're right, it's not done.
So, just before we get into anything, I just wanted to start off about you telling us about young Calvin. I want to know about where you grew up. What was it like growing up in Bedford-Stuyvesant? Tell me a little bit about how it was as a young Calvin growing up in Brooklyn.
Well, I grew up in a project called Lafayette Garden Projects in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, a.k.a. LG Projects. And, you know, seven buildings in the projects. It was...
What building you was in?
I was in 411.
Okay.
which everybody called the goody building. Like, 411 and the building in front of me, 415, those was the... Everybody in the project called those buildings the goody good building.
Why?
Because, you know, that's where, like, a lot of the older people live in those two buildings. We always had tenant patrol, mm-hmm. you know, in the lobby of those two buildings. There was really never no trouble that ever went down in between them two buildings. So
people didn't really get murked too much over there.
Nah. Even though all the buildings is right connected to each other, but
you could wear your 411,
415,
building?
You was good.
Oh, okay.
So, but growing up in those projects, you know, it was rough. You know, you had the drug dealers, you had the hustlers, you had, you know, all types of cats doing stuff that they didn't really have no business doing. But from the age of 12, you know, I started getting into DJing through my uncle Barry, rest in peace.
Age of 12?
At 12, yeah. I started DJing, you know, my uncle Barry used to DJ, him and his next door neighbor named Anthony. They was DJing and just, I used to watch them DJ because my uncle wouldn't let me DJ on his set. Mm-hmm. So I would just kind of emulate what my uncle Barry would do on the set. But then I would go to Anthony's house, my next door neighbor's house, because Anthony's parents would allow me to go next door when Anthony wasn't around mm-hmm. to practice. And then when my neighbor Anthony got wind of me going over there, he just said, you know, Calvin, anytime you want to come over here and, you know, and practice, or you want to watch me, you can watch me. And that's how I started learning the craft, was just emulating my uncle and my next door neighbor, DJing, and that's how I first started getting into DJing.
Do you have siblings?
I got three brothers through my mother and father. I'm the oldest out of everybody.
Okay.
But through my mother and father, I have three brothers, and then I have a half sister named Cicely,
mm-hmm.
and a half brother who passed away named Christopher. So those are my siblings.
What is your relationship like now with your siblings? Like, what are they up to?
Well, my brother underneath me, Randy, he passed away back in 93. So,
was close with Randy, weren't you?
Somewhat, but you know, my brother Randy, who passed away, he was heavy into the streets and hustling. So, you know, our relationship was kind of in and out because he was always going out of town hustling or whatever. So, you know, when he was in town, I, you know, had a relationship with him. When he was gone, I didn't really get to see him.
Right.
But probably my brother underneath Randy, which is Daryl, that's probably who I had the closest relationship with.
What's up with Daryl?
Daryl is he's in college right now. Anybody in the hood that know what college means, he's in college right now.
He's in this college?
Yeah, he's in college right now. But I probably have the closest relationship with him because of music, because my brother Daryl used to rap back in the days, and of course I was DJing, so we had a lot in common when it came down to music. But Randy and Daryl, they used to always hustle together.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of how
the Kling Kling came about.
Yeah, and that's how he kind of veered off the path, you know. But he's kind of been on and off going to college.
Okay.
You know, I whatever. And my youngest brother Shannon, and I know why you asking me, Shay. I know why you asking me what's my relationship with my brothers.
I'm just saying.
Because when I come over here, she always asks me, "Do you talk to Shannon? Have you talked to Shannon?"
Because, listen, the climate that we're in. I just feel like, listen, we already know that we all go through differences with family. It's a lot of hard times. It's a lot of good times. And no matter what the situation is, we just gotta.
But I don't have it. My youngest brother, Shannon, I don't have an issue with him. We just, I don't know, just we had that relationship where it's like we don't really talk often, but when we see each other or when we do speak, it's like, you know, it's like as if we spoke every day.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I don't really, my youngest brother Shannon, me and him is good. He's a practical joker, and he's a, you know, he studies psychology, so he always try to play with your head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another, you know, and I don't like those, you know, trying to play mind games with me or whatever the case is. But I love my brother Shannon. He owns his own business. He mm-hmm. He has a dog walking business.
You want to get his business a little shout out?
Waggy
right
Walkers. Waggy Walkers, my brother Shannon LeBron, Waggy Walkers. And he actually just recently started teaching karate.
Oh, okay.
So
he got skills?
Yeah, no, he's black belt in karate. He's
you know, belt. Just on the topic of your brothers real quick, your brother Daryl, in my opinion, is like the spitting image of you.
Mm.
And I just feel that when they did that Notorious B.I.G. movie.
That he should have played me?
He should have definitely played you.
Yeah, I mean, all of us pretty, you know, we all kind of look alike.
No,
in some
but
way,
you
shape,
and Daryl.
But I never showed you a picture of my brother Randy. That's I
did. Yeah, you did.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not like Daryl, though.
Me and Daryl and Shannon. I mean, Randy,
like
Randy is probably the only one because Randy was always like the slimmest one of out of us four.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all got similarities.
Yeah, but you and Daryl.
Me and Daryl's probably the closest. As far as the look, absolutely.
Tell me about your parents. Like, so what was it like? Like, who was in the apartment in LG?
Well, I mean, I was raised from my mother and father till I was like 5.5 years old. And me, my three brothers and my mother and father, we lived 5 blocks away from Lafayette Gardens. So we lived on Gates Avenue. Which later became my apartment that you know.
You're talking about Gates, Bedford, and Franklin.
Gates, Bedford, and Franklin. Gates, Bedford, and Franklin. That's where I used to live. But I was born and raised until like 5.5 years old with my mother and father.
Okay.
My father was a hustler, ran numbers, you know, selling reefer.
Mm-hmm. Did you say reefer?
Yep, because it wasn't called weed back then. Back then it was called reefer.
In the
little yellow Manila envelopes. You know what I mean? He was selling reefer.
Okay.
And my mother, she was hustling too, but my father was
a
little bit of everything. You know, you name it, she did it. You know what I'm saying? But my mother also got kind of into the drugs as well later on. Mm-hmm. But I was raised from my mother and father till I was like 5.5 years old. And then we moved to my grandparents' house in Lafayette Gardens because I started a fire in my mother and father's house.
Tell us about that fire.
So
the notorious fire.
The fire. So like I just said, my mother and father would leave because they was, you know, out in the street doing their thing. So uh-huh. they used to have me at 5, 5.5.
Wow.
Taking care of my three brothers.
Wow.
I used to cook and everything at 5.
So you got cooking skills?
Absolutely not.
Oh. So, obviously, because the fire started.
Right.
Okay.
So one day my mother left. My father was already out. My mother left and was like, yo, just, you know, cook some breakfast for your brothers. So
what was it? Do you remember?
Eggs. Eggs and bacon. And it's crazy because to this day, I don't eat eggs. I don't even eat eggs.
Is it because of that?
I don't know. Maybe it is. Subliminally, okay. Maybe that's what it is.
Okay.
So I'm cooking eggs and bacon, and I'm trying to watch my three brothers. My youngest brother, Shannon, was in the crib.
Acting up.
Randy and Daryl was running around.
Wrestling.
And then next you know, the fire started.
Okay.
And, you know, people from the neighborhood.
What did you, how did y'all get out? Like, was y'all like.
My father came.
Okay. Because
my father was like right up the street on Fulton Street hustling. Mm-hmm. So word got to him somehow. And he ran back to the house and got us all out of there. And actually, the way the bedroom was set up, my mother's and father's bedroom was like, the other side of the bedroom was where the crib was, where my baby brother Shannon was.
Mm-hmm.
So me and my other two brothers was able to get out the house, and Shannon was still in the crib in the fire.
Oh, God.
So my father had to go in there. Like the fire department was on some old, don't go in there.
Mm-hmm.
He went in there, and literally the bed was burning. He jumped over the bed to save
Shannon. So he saved Shannon's life.
Yeah. You know.
See why you got to call Shannon?
See why?
You see the importance of family? You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to get to it, Shay. I'm going to get to it.
So, and from that point on, we're going to assume that the house was ashes.
Yeah, because we lived on the top floor.
Okay. And then from that point.
We moved to my grandparents' house.
In LG.
In Lafayette Gardens, yep.
Okay, so who's in LG now?
So when I moved with my grandparents, you got my grandmother, my grandfather, my aunt, my uncle, my other two cousins. And it was like 10 of us in one house. It was 10 of us in one house. And the crazy thing is, 10 of us in one place, nobody was allowed to sleep in the living room.
That's good. That's respect.
Nobody was allowed mm-hmm. to sleep in the room.
Cause you ain't gonna be laying up and messing up grandma's couch.
Nah. You know what I mean? And
she had plastic on it?
Absolutely. Plastic. Absolutely.
Wow.
And it was great. It was great growing up with my grandparents. I mean, you know, my grandfather used to repossess cars
okay.
for a living. Mm-hmm. So he made a lot of money.
And it was a lot of hustlers in your family.
Yeah, he used to be. I mean, that was a legitimate job, but mm-hmm. you know.
But it still was a grind.
Yeah, and he worked at night,
mm-hmm.
and my grandmother stayed at home, took care of all of us. And
so, at this point, is your parents like living?
Well, after the fire, my mother and father separated.
Okay.
After the fire, they separated, and then my father went into the Navy for a minute.
Okay.
And so on and so forth, and then my mother got more heavy into the drugs. Mm.
So your grandparents like really held y'all down?
Yeah, from like 5.5 until I was 21.
Is your grandparents living?
My grandfather passed away in 2006. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, God bless her, is still here.
Mm-hmm. Is that mommy or daddy's mother?
That's my mother's mother.
Okay. What descent are they from? Like
my mother's side of the family is from the South. Like Atlanta, okay. mainly Atlanta, Georgia. And my father's side of the family is Trinidad.
Okay.
And
so you're Paul Coco?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Paul Coco Brad.
Yeah, you always make fun of me about that. my father's side of the family from Trinidad mm-hmm. and from Toronto, Canada. I got family in Canada, too. I don't think I ever told you that.
No, I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that little twang up in your...
A little OVO. Got a little OVO. Look.
Girl, they got me good.
Yeah, I'm from the six. I'm from the six.
Yeah?
I got a little bit of six in me.
Right. So, it's very interesting. Is it fair to say that Big Daddy Kane gave you your start in the music industry?
Well, it's fair to say that we both gave each other a start because me and Big Daddy Kane, I met Kane in high school. I went to Sarah J. Hale High School in Brooklyn, and that's where I first met MC Kane.
You know, there was no Big Daddy then?
There was no Big Daddy Kane.
Okay.
I met MC Kane in high school. And
did you graduate?
I graduated from high school.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I mean, I had to go to summer school in the last year.
You know
year.
What? I ain't need to know all of that.
Yeah, I
you
did.
You got
because you know the crazy thing is I was a like a brainiac student from first
brainiac
grade.
Dumb dumb.
Yeah, brainiac dumb dumb Buster Scientific. I was a like a brainiac student from, you know, first grade until and I started messing up in the 12th grade.
Why?
Because that's when the, you know honestly
the fire
no that's when the music really started taking over and I was just so much getting into the art of doing the music and.
So how did the Canes?
I met Kane in high school.
MC Kane C collaboration.
I met Kane in high school.
Okay.
I met him in the lunchroom. I walked in the lunchroom. It was a, you know, a big circle in the lunchroom. And, you know, that's when we used to bang on the table. Uh-huh. And it was these two guys rapping against each other. And it was Kane against this other dude. And Kane... He just said this one line that I always remember. He was like, I got braids in my head just like Stevie Wonder. Because back then he had the little cornrow braids. And that little line just kind of blew my mind. So after the lunch period, I came up to him. I was like, yo, man.
After you finished eating, of course.
Of course. You know, I love
to eat. All right, go ahead.
You know, I came up to him and I was like, yo, I would, you know, I would love to DJ for you or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So he was like, no, I don't really, you know. Because I was like, I got a little crew.
Uh-huh.
In my neighborhood what called the Magnum Force Crew.
Magnum Force?
The Magnum Force Crew. And I was like, yo, come around my way and check out my crew. And he's like, nah, you know, I roll solo. So I was like, nah, just come around my way, man. Hear me play or whatever. So he came around.
Mm-hmm.
Here I got down on the set. And he
Who we come with?
He came by himself.
Oh, okay.
Came by himself. He lived right up the street on Lafayette and Lewis Avenue in Bed-Stuy. Came by himself, heard me play, and he got down with the Magnum Force.
Okay.
Kane did.
Okay, and then how did we get to Big Daddy Kane DJ Mr. C?
Well, Kane, for people that don't know, Kane got his name. It's a combination of two things. He used to always walk around with canes, and Kane had a fascination. I don't know why. Kane had a fascination with canes.
Mm.
When I first went to his mother's house in Bed-Stuy, I walk in his bedroom, and there's canes, walking, all types of walking canes dangling
really?
From the ceiling.
That's interesting.
And you had to, like, walk through his bedroom with all the canes hanging down.
Like the beaded curtains.
Yeah. It's like, and so that's one
Maybe
reason.
He had an injury we don't know about.
Absolutely not, Shay. Don't do that to him.
You never know.
No. He loved canes. He loved all types of walking canes.
Well, you know I interviewed Kane.
Yeah, I saw that interview.
That interview you saw.
Yeah. That one I saw. That I like.
And that one you like?
Yeah, that I like.
And when he walked in here, he didn't look like he had an injury. Just wanted to let you know, he looked amazing. You know.
Yeah, Kane keeps.
Kane's a good guy.
He keeps himself up to speed.
All of these years, he doesn't look much the same.
Well, I'm not too shabby neither.
You know, a little beach ball in your shirt, but other than that,
nah. You know, I was bigger than this, Shay.
Yeah, I know. Like what happened? Like.
Well, back in 2006, I almost had a stroke in 2006.
Them cheeseburgers.
I used to eat like really, 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 really heavy.
You think? Yeah. And, two cheeseburgers. Yo, let me tell you. A lot of people don't know that back in the days, right, when I was on tour with Master Ace, this was in what? I don't know. Maybe 1990.
This before you bagged him up?
Yeah.
Oh. Go ahead.
C used to road manage for us and... Every time we got to the hotel, he used to dart to the hotel just so that he can order room service, and he got the same thing every single time.
What was the order?
The order was, yo, I'm in room 213. Let me get two cheeseburgers, two root beers, order ice cream, and a lot of mayonnaise.
But all that type of eating led to me almost having a heart attack in 2006. What happened
that damn
was
grease.
It was Mother's Day 2006. I took all the women in my family out for Mother's Day dinner at City Island, and I started noticing that I couldn't walk I couldn't even walk a half block.
What was your weight when you were at your heaviest?
Like 260 and change.
Mm.
260 and change, or even maybe 270. But I could not walk a half block without having to stop and catch my breath.
Mm-hmm.
So the rest of my family was walking ahead of me, and I had to stop. And my grandmother was like, you're going to the doctor tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I went the next day. And
what they said?
You got high blood pressure, and you was like a walking
heart
attack.
You're 5 minutes away from a stroke.
Yeah. So you know, I had to start taking blood medication. I'm still on blood medication now, but
did you change your diet at all?
Yeah, I don't mean I don't eat nowhere near as much as heavy as I used to eat, but
you still rocking them cheeseburgers and the two groupies?
Not as much. Not like I used to. Even when I come over here and you and Ace cook, like, y'all be trying to pound food because y'all think of me back in the days.
But the
and
whole
I'm like,
thing is that you eat it. Yeah, but
the food is more healthier now than back when I was eating.
You,
you
feel
know.
Better about yourself because you had a salad?
I mean, I'm like, what do you think?
I think you, honestly, I think that you look great, yeah. You know, because I remember when you was definitely on Swole.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty, I'm just glad I caught it in time before it got pretty crazy. I had to take water pills to get all that salt and sodium out my body.
You don't have to
like
take
that.
It for the rest of your life, do you?
No, but, you know, I mean, I still have to be mindful of, you know.
What you eat.
What I eat, yeah. Absolutely.
So, back to Kane. One thing that I thought that was very fitting for you is that Kane was the one who gave you the name The Nasty African.
Okay. Yeah, that was the first nickname I had.
And I think that name was very fitting to you. I want to know why did Kane give you that name?
Well, the reason that Kane gave me the Nasty African name is because... Because
you were evil Leo.
No, absolutely not.
All right, go.
Because I used to wear silk tiger underwear.
What the fuck? What show we on?
I don't know what it was back then in the late 80s, but
why?
I had a fascination with tight, you know, the leopard print underwear, man.
You had on the tidy whiteys?
Yeah, I used to wear it, and not the boxes, the other ones.
The tidy whiteys.
Yeah, I used to wear those.
Why?
I don't even know, Shay. I had a fascination with that back then. I have no idea.
What did you want? The bulge to stick out a little bit more?
I ain't really.
You don't like that freedom?
I ain't really got no bulge, so it ain't wasn't about it that. It was just a fascination. I don't know. Maybe because I used to watch porno flicks super, super heavy. So, like, watching the porno flicks, the porno dudes back then used to wear them type of shit. Like, I don't know, man.
So you thought you was a porno star in your mind?
Well, I was, yeah, I mean, you know.
But you said that your bulge wasn't that big, though.
Yeah, no,
how
was
can you
it?
Be down
no.
with the Magnum MCs and you're not working with a Magnum?
No, but, that's the 80s, Shay. It was a different time. Like, you know, and then you trying to impress the girl.
You gotta let that flow, though. You gotta let that move.
Nah, I mean, I didn't get to the briefs until the 90s. I really didn't. I'm gonna keep it funky with you.
But you know what?
But that's where Nasty African came from.
I'm not no scientist or no doctor or nothing, but that's probably why you don't have no kids, because you ain't let that flow. You know what I'm saying? You gotta let that flow. Yeah, when it's clogged up, like when it's stuck in one place, it's hard for that to move.
Then why do they make them then? Why do they make them? Why do they make tidy whiteys if you know it's gonna, you know, cling on to the,
yo,
you know what I mean? To the
sometimes you got to let it flow.
To the two chains. If you're gonna cling on to the two chains, you know what I mean?
Oh,
but
man.
That's why.
Okay, so how does that correlate with Nasty African?
Because I'm wearing leopard print drawers and it look like an African.
It had nothing to do with your evilness?
It had nothing to do with that. Because, you know, Kane used to always say, you know, and oh, here's another thing.
All right.
The first girl who I had sex with on the road, they called her Umfufu.
Why? Because she was ugly?
Because they said she's like an African. No, so.
That's what you was getting
thrown
on the road?
So it was a combination of both of those.
You was getting thrown Umfufus on the road?
Well, I mean, I was just trying to get what I can get.
Damn. You didn't discriminate.
Absolutely not. 2-3 in the morning? We ain't got time to discriminate.
You're disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, in that era...
And Umfufu didn't say nothing about the tidy whiteys.
Nah,
all she knows is that she has sex with DJ Mr.
She
C.
She loved them tidy whiteys.
Ew, you throw up. You're disgusting. Well, I assume that the name Nasty African was because of your evil self.
The first girl I had sex with on the road, she was from London. We was overseas.
Umfufu was from London?
Yeah, and they was like, yo, she looked like Umfufu. You remember the Eddie Murphy jerk?
Of course.
So That's where it came
from. Well, I mean, a lot of people that know you, or maybe not know you, but know of you, know you to be a very evil and mean individual.
You think so?
Absolutely.
You know what? Why they don't come tell me that in my face? Why they always gotta tell somebody else? This is what I don't like about people.
Hold on.
This is what I don't like about our people. Why you go tell somebody else about how you feel about somebody else? Come and tell me.
I'm gonna tell you right now.
Because you know what?
I'm gonna tell you right now. Hold on.
Because it'll be the same people that say that. That'll come to me. You'll see. I love you.
Exactly. But let me tell you something. Not for nothing. I feel what you're saying. You got a good point. But from what I experienced with you, you fucking evil too. Like, you got your shit with you. Absolutely. Don't care. You can't walk around. You can't walk around and act like, you know, you. How are you, yo, my man? But you not that type. You are, when I say evil, I feel that's your guard. I feel that you have, over the years, have this persona, and this is just my opinion, because it comes from you being in this industry so long, people coming up to you and they like, yo, see, I want you to listen to my tape, or yo, see, yo, you know I rap, yo, see, I could get in Summer Jam. It's a whole bunch of things with randomness, people that you don't know, always coming to you, asking you for shit, asking something of you. Like, we already know, we in an industry where it's not a lot of genuine people. You know what I'm saying? So, in my opinion, I feel like you put up this shield where you just don't fucking want to be bothered.
Now, can I tell you my version?
No, but do you agree with anything that I said?
Somewhat? Okay. Because it's not really a shield.
I think so.
No, it's not really. It's, you know, not why really
I
say a
it's a shield? Because I know that you're not really like that.
But here's the thing, though. I don't fuck with a lot of people.
But you still fucking mean.
No, but that's the point.
Why do you mean, though? Because
first of all, I don't trust a lot of people.
Okay, ding.
So there's, you know, and that don't got nothing to do with the industry or nothing. I just don't trust people. I just don't. I have a lot of trust, a lot of problems giving 100% trust into people, because I've seen how those same people do somebody else. And when I see them do wrong to somebody else, that makes me even be like, I'm not fucking with you. Because if you do that to that person who's supposed to be your man or your homie or your best friend or your girl, then imagine what you're going to do to me, and I'm not even as close to you.
But you don't think that's a shield?
That's not a shield. That's just like,
you're protecting yourself.
That's just like, I see. I'm a type of person that I check people out from afar. I'm very observant of people, of how they do, you know, how they treat other people. And when I see that they do wrong, and a lot of people do wrong to other people, I don't fuck with them.
Well,
sometimes I catch on to people very early and they don't even notice that I'm checking them out and seeing how they carry themselves. And when I see that, then that's what makes me be like, yo, I don't even want to be around this person. Because if they doing that to their own wife or their best friend,
right,
what are they going to do to little old me?
Little old? You're far from little, but I understand your point. You feel what I'm saying? Yeah,
absolutely. But so a lot of it has to do with what I see from people from afar to make me, and I hate to say this, but our people,
of course,
black people,
right?
A lot of them is very shysty, man.
I feel you. There's nothing that you
and
said.
This is not. It's not. I love my people. You know what I mean? I'm black to the death, but we got a lot of shit with us.
Absolutely, and I don't disagree with that.
So with me to not intertwine with the fake shit. If I see it, I don't want to be a part of it.
Well, I feel you.
The industry situation, that don't really have anything to do with it. It's more of what I see from afar from a lot of people. You know what I mean?
But what that got to do with me, Nikki, and Lynette coming ringing your bell on Gates Avenue and you coming to the door? What? I'm asleep. What do you want? Leave me alone. I had a party last night. Nigga, you told us to come through.
Well, what? I'm a person that's set in my ways.
You think?
I'm set in my ways. I'm not gonna lie about that.
Okay.
And you know, it's hard for me to break.
You know us though. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I know you. Okay. Yeah, my people. But you know, if I'm just now y'all waking me up on my sleep, you're waking me up on my goddamn sleep, and I'm gonna tell you about it. Just like today, we were supposed to do this interview at 9 o'clock, your normal time. Shit, I'm not getting here at 9.
It's actually 11, but yeah.
I love 11 and 9. I it's too early for me. I'm you know me for you knew. You knew I was going to come in and do it.
That's why this is a special edition.
So,
I'm just saying, you have your
this
moments.
Ain't no prima donna shit. This no, ain't nothing. But listen, I am set in my ways.
I get it. I'm just saying. But I just want you to acknowledge that
but now,
you have
let me,
that tendency.
Let me ask you this. What? Would you say throughout the years that I have changed?
Absolutely. Because you used to be way, 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 way worse.
Yeah, I used to be a super asshole.
Oh, what?
Yeah. You're I mean, so but throughout time, I've loosened up. Throughout time, but I've loosened up.
I actually...
In older age.
I have, you know, many, many stories as to how I could go on and defend that you're not as evil as people perceive you to be. Matter of fact, I have a personal story that I wanted to share because a lot of people really just don't know that side of you. But I remember when I was living in Brooklyn and Canarsie to be exact.
Okay.
And I think I was about maybe 7-8 months pregnant. And
I know the story you're going to tell.
You know, because this story is a good story to me, and it just means a lot. So I just wanted to tell y'all about, you know, Bop really does have a soft, cuddly side, just a little bit. But anyway, I was about 7-8 months pregnant, and I think Pooh was on tour. You know, he probably was in Europe somewhere, like he is right now, because you know that's the UK Hove, and. I called C and I said, yo, what you doing? And you was like, I'm sleep, you know, your favorite line. And I was like, oh, all right, well, he was like, what you wanted? And I was like, I just wanted to know if you wanted to ride. It had to be like maybe 11 o'clock at night. And I was like, I wanted to know if you wanted to ride with me because I really had a taste for some ice cream. And you was like, ice cream? Yo, Shay, I'm sleep, yo. You're going to have to get your ice cream tomorrow. I was like, all right, no problem. And he hung up on me. And I was like, motherfucker, what an asshole. So then I just didn't say nothing. I just popped on the TV, and I'm sitting back. I'm looking at TV. My phone rings about 20 minutes later, and I'm like, hello? Come outside! And he was outside. He's like, get your shoes on. Come out there! And then we went to Queenie over there?
Utica.
Yeah, on Utica. And you took me to Queenie, and I was like, thank you, C. And then I got outside, and you was like, yo, hold up! I'm like, what? Yo, let me get 2 scoops of butter pecan while you in there. Yo, I was just like, oh, C, you got a nice side. You know, like, people don't know that you actually do have that.
I mean, the people that I'm close with know how I am, and I'm a very loyal person. If I'm with you, I'm with you, and when I'm with you, I'm riding till the wheels fall off. Mm-hmm. But if I don't really rock with you or whatever the case is, then you know I'm gonna have my distance with you. That's just what it is. I'm not really a person, you know. The common folk, they hang out, they go to each other's houses, and I'm not really with all of that, you know. And I'm going to this thing, this family function, and I'm not. Let me just chill in the crib and watch Power or watch whatever is my favorite show or NFL Network and leave me the hell alone.
ESPN.
No more ESPN. ESPN fell off.
No? You used to love ESPN.
I used to love ESPN. But, you know, ever since Stuart Scott passed away, it hasn't been the same.
But you know what? And I was just thinking, added on to something else was when you were a sports commentator. What station was that
I was on?
On
SNY, which is the... a sport.
That was dope.
Yeah,
like,
I was doing this show called Daily News Live, and I was on once a week doing sports commentary. It was like one particular summer. I forgot what year it was, but they had me on for the whole summer once a week, and I had a great time doing it. I definitely, you know, if it's an opportunity to get back into it, I would love to get back into it.
Because you freaking know sports, and especially football, like...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Ever since I was always into sports. I used to play baseball. For my high school baseball team, for Sarah J. Hale High School. So, and I just always was into sports, so it's just always been a part of me.
People don't know, you know, the closeness, how close we are. And, you know, of course, I said the story about the pregnancy story, but I was just thinking, like, people don't know that you are my daughter's godfather. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I say our daughter, I'm talking about like not you know, we grew up with him and that's your godfather, like the real godfather. Like you were there when my daughter was christened at 6 months old. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the history. And, you know, Milan is going to be 12 years old. So it's been a long time. You were there when me and Pooh got married.
Yeah,
you
know what I'm saying? I cried at the wedding like a fat baby. I
was, blubbering.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you and David sitting there crying. Snot, you know, everything running. Like, so, you know, you've been part of, like, the whole ride.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know.
Y'all my second family. I mean, you know.
I just wanted to, you know, let the people know. People don't know that, you know, on my daughter's fifth birthday, you came through with, you know, like a big fuchsia pink fish tank full of goldfish. You know what I mean?
Now, if you're going to tell the good side, you got to tell the bad side, too.
Oh, no, I'm getting there. Okay. Don't worry. No, hold the tail.
Okay, get to the bad side. Because I don't want everybody to be like, angel. Oh, this is a wonderful guy. No. Get to the bad side.
I'm just saying, you're wonderful to me. Could I say that?
Yes, you can say that.
Oh, all right.
But, you know, I've been a piece of shit to you as well.
That ain't never lie.
You know.
You can go ahead if you want. I'll wait. You can let the people know how you. Well,
a couple of months ago, you know, I had.
This was actually, this worth saying?
No, we have to say it.
Okay, well, Christmas don't say time, no names.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, all right.
Well, you know, Christmas time, I had promised my goddaughter that I would come by and see her for Christmas, and I didn't live up to that promise. And when I tell y'all, Shay called me. And lit me. And I've known Shay over 20 years. But it really was a string of things. It was a string of me promising my goddaughter Milan that I was going to come by. Or promising I was going to do this. It was a string of those times that I was not delivering. And it was like adding on. But the Christmas thing was like the last straw. This past Christmas. And Shay called me and just lit me.
Because what you don't do is you make a promise to a little kid.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And don't follow through with it. Because, like, there's, of course, my daughter's father is her number one man, her first love of her life. But there's other men in her life, like her uncles, one being you, that she looks up to. And you, it's your duty to set an example of what she's...
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So I was a little tight about that.
Yeah, so, you know...
I get tight when it's anything Milan related.
Well, you know, I mean, all the years we've known each other, I've never seen you that angry. And I mean, when I didn't see it, I heard it on the phone. You motherfucker! I never seen or heard that side of you. And it really hurted my heart that I heard
it. Did you say
heard it. Well, you said some whack word earlier, yeah, too. All right. It hurted my heart, Ebonics,
okay,
that I hurt you and Milan that way and Ace that way. So, you know.
Well, I appreciate that.
You appreciate that I hurted you?
No, I appreciate that you... I hurted you. You know, I appreciated that you owned up to you did something wrong and you apologized and it was appreciated.
No, this is not. This is
no, my, I'm just saying.
No,
it was appreciated.
This is my second family, man. I can't, you know, that's not clean. That's not clean. That's not good.
So basically what I'm trying to say is that you're not industry family. That's my message that I'm trying to say. You're family. And it's totally a difference. There's a lot of people that come in here and they my industry family. Yo, what's good? Whatever. I see you in a party. It's dap. It's love. It's all of that. But this is a little bit something different. So I just wanted to, you know, bring that to the attention. So, you know, we ridiculously close. We've talked about millions of things. I feel like if you need something from me, I'm good, vice versa. And, you know, I said all of that to say that when I'm hurt, I feel that you hurt. And when you hurt, I hurt. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to talk about, it was something that happened in your life that kind of took a left turn.
The homo shit.
You know what?
The homo talk.
In your life. Mm-hmm. And it was just a...
We're going to talk homo talk?
Listen,
okay.
We ain't going to talk homo talk. We're going to just talk about what actually happened. So, a couple of years ago, I guess whatever year it was, doesn't matter.
2011.
Damn. You was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like... It's just funny to me how, you know, somebody that obviously... have everything going for you at the top of your game, one of the best DJs in the industry, had took a slight little left turn because of this one arrest. Do you want to, you know, talk about what took place?
Oh, I mean, we could talk about it. I mean,
what took place? Why did you get arrested?
I got arrested because I was getting some top. I was getting some top from a transsexual.
Okay. Go on.
That's what happened. That's why I got arrested. What more you want me to say?
Was you arrested, what, one time?
I was arrested twice. Okay. 2011. And it's funny because on the way house, the second time I got arrested, it was either, I can't remember if it was the end of 2012 or the beginning of 2013, but it was somewhere around that time.
Mm-hmm. So the charge was?
The charge
you
was.
You were soliciting a transgender prostitute.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So just to let you know, everybody, I don't care. I don't know if you realize this or not, but me and you ain't really never had a sit down talk about this.
We didn't?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
When this started to come about, you know, I tried to give you your space, and you was like, yo, you called me and you was like, all I got to say is, you know, don't worry about nothing. I'm good. When I get the moment, we going to sit down. I'm going to tell you everything.
So you want, to wait till the Lachey show to talk about it?
I mean, what better time? What better time?
Okay.
Yeah, what better time? So let me just come right out and let me just ask you this.
Just ask me what you want to ask me. You've been
What is your obsession with the tranny? That's what I want to know.
I mean,
the strong jaw. Like why a transgender?
You know, it really, you know, my last serious relationship with a woman ended in 2001, right? And it was a rough breakup.
Okay.
And after me and her broke up, I was heavily into going to the strip clubs. You know,
you was going off.
Yeah, going off, tricking on women.
Okay.
Or whatever. And it just, Shay, I really can't explain it, but it just kind of transformed from me doing that into, you know, going looking for a transsexual and getting, you know, some fellatio, some top. It wasn't like somebody put me on to it. It wasn't like a thing where, you know, put it like this, where Hot 97 is located in Manhattan, like literally blocks away from Hot 97 is the area where a lot of transsexuals would be. And I don't know if it started off just because there was a lot of the transsexuals was a couple of blocks away from where the station was, and I used to have to ride by there. And I don't know if that's how, you know, but I can't really say why it started or what, you know, but it kind of.
But I understand the process.
The best way I can explain it is, if you're an addict and you start off smoking weed and then you go from weed to crack, that's the best way I can explain it.
Well, I can understand the prostitute thing, just as far as
like a female, like a regular female.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, you know, you want a service, you pay for it. Right. There's no connection. Whatever, you don't gotta hug, kiss, you don't gotta buy breakfast in the morning.
Right.
I get it. You know what I'm saying? It's over. I just wanted to know from you, what was the thing with, you know, a girl with a penis? Like, why that?
I can't explain it. Like, even when I used to go to therapy and talk to my therapist, he used to ask me the same thing. I can't say what was the moment that triggered it off, that kind of got me into that lifestyle. I really can't say, but I know that the transformation of leaving a serious relationship in 2001 into tricking on strippers, kind of, and then gradually getting top from transsexual, that's just how it happened. Because they like you're not asking me how it happened with me messing with strippers, with female strippers. It just happened. And that's the best way I can explain it. It wasn't like, you know, I saw a commercial for just happened.
I wouldn't ask you about how it would happen with a female stripper because.
Well, why not? I'm paying for a service the same way. Same thing. I'm paying for a service.
Not exactly.
It's the same thing, Shay.
I don't know.
The only difference is you looking at it because it's man on man. But the point I'm making is that it was the transition that I made after that last serious relationship was really all about yo, I don't trust no broads. I'm just going to do a hit it and quit it. Keep it moving. I got my career to worry about. And that started the progression of from the strippers into, you know, the transsexual top.
I got a quote here that you said from another interview that you've done. And you admitted, and I quote, you said, "I deal with transgenders for one reason and one reason only, oral sex. No offense to transgender, but I never had sex with a transgender woman." And, well, I guess you meant penetrated.
Right.
"And neither has a transgender penetrated you." Okay, right, so what do you have to say about that comment that you said?
I mean, that's the truth. I mean, that's the actual comment. That's what I said. That's the truth. And that's why when I was going through, you know, doing those interviews with Ebro on Hot 97, and he would ask me, am I gay? And I would say no.
I just, by the way, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I didn't like that at all.
You didn't like what?
I didn't like how when, you know, when you was going through all of that and you went up to, I guess, tell your side of the story, and how Ebro was up there and he was like, "Yo, this is your chance right now. Say it right now. You gay, just say it right now." Like, you know, I didn't appreciate that at all. I felt like at that time, Hot 97, that was allegedly your family, could have handled you differently.
Well, I mean,
More to me as ratings. That's all it was.
Well, there was a lot of things that happened behind the scenes with the station and with the company, with them standing behind me through the whole ordeal. Like, for instance, you know, from the first time I got arrested to the second time I got arrested, they could have suspended me, you know, or whatever the case is. No, but
I feel you.
They could have suspended me.
Okay.
Or whatever the case is. I mean, you know, they probably couldn't have fired me because of the situation. Could have, you know, because maybe a lawsuit could have happened after that, but they could have suspended me. They never did. They could have said to me, you know, "We need you to go to counseling." I went to counseling on my own. They never, like,
I thought you said that was like a court order.
It was a court order. But then even after the court order was over, I continued to go to counseling on my own.
Let me ask you this. What was the counseling exactly for? Is it you? How do you go to counseling because you want to get topped by?
Well, I mean,
or was it the counseling because you did an illegal act?
No, the counseling when I got a court order to go to counseling was because there was multiple arrests. So they looked at it like, you know, there's a problem here. Okay. This is the way the court looked at it.
Okay.
And you have to remember, I plead guilty. So me pleading guilty, this was the offer that they gave me.
Okay.
With the plea deal.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying? But back to the Hot 97 situation, I mean, you know, from the program director to the general manager to even the president of MS Broadcasting, who owns Hot 97, you know, they was behind me, I would say 200%. And any decision that was made, I had the final go ahead on saying yes or no to it. Meaning that when Ebro asked me about going on the show, I said yes. I didn't have to go on the show if I didn't want to.
But you didn't. But at the same time, when you agreed to the interview, you didn't know that he was gonna come for your neck how he did.
Well, I mean, I didn't know. This interview, I didn't know, because you even before this interview, you said, "Do you want me to tell you what?" I'm like, "Nah, I don't want you to tell me." And it was the same thing with Ebro. It was like, you know, it was the same thing. It was like he was like, "You want me to tell you how I'm gonna present it?" And I was like, "Nah, let's just do it." It was really literally the same way, because to me, if you don't, I look at it the opposite way. I look at it as if Ebro didn't come at me as if he did not come at me like if I was not somebody from the station, then it would have looked like you being soft on him because he's your family. That's the way I looked at it.
Well, I didn't look at it like that.
Right.
I never
took offense to it because once again, I made the decision.
This is your chance. Say it right now. Say it right now. Nah, I didn't like that.
I understand your point.
I didn't like that.
I understand your point. And, you know, even giving it, even if I give you the credit of saying that it was about ratings, so what? I mean,
I'm going to tell you why, so what?
So, I mean,
I'm going to tell you why, so what? Because I expected them to not handle you like that. That's all I'm saying. I'm talking for me. You can say whatever you want to.
But it's a question.
No. It was a little bit more than just one question. It was a little bit like an interrogation. Like, it was like, yo, yo, this is your chance. Is you gay or not? And I'm like,
but Shay, if they would, if Ebro would have been like, see, you know, you're my brother.
Nah, I'm not saying that neither.
So I mean, you got to look at it from
this. This is your chance.
You got to look at it from this. You got to look at it from the standpoint of how he had to deal with it. Am I going to deal with it with kid gloves, or am I going to do it as if it was another celebrity
here? He wanted an admission on his slot in the morning.
Of course
so that
he did. Right. Of course he did.
So that's what I'm saying. Of course he did. What it was about.
Of course he did.
It wasn't about no genuine concern about what you was going
through. But
you're
wrong about that. You're wrong about that. Because people like Ebro and people like Flex was behind me 100-200% during the whole ordeal. More behind the scenes than, well, Flex was probably more on the front line behind the scenes and in front, on the radio as well. But it was the support I got from Hot 97 at that time was beyond what I even expected. Beyond what I expected.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. But then still, I want to say, I don't like how that they handled you.
But how you expect for Ebro to ask me?
I don't like that. I just didn't like it. And that's just
like,
my feelings
on it. Like, you asked me earlier. Hold up. But you asked me earlier, you got arrested in 2011 for what?
Right.
So, I mean.
Right, because right. People want to know.
I understand that. But the point I'm making is that the way you deliver an interview and the way somebody else deliver it is two different ways.
You know what the two different ways is? I respect you. That's the difference. There's some people that interview you and they handle you without respect.
I disagree with that.
You can.
I
don't care. Yo, listen. You can.
I disagree with that.
We disagree on a freaking daily basis. I don't give a fike what you disagree with. I don't like how you was handled.
I disagree.
Okay.
Because ultimately, I made the decision of how it was going to be dealt with.
You did not make the decision on what your line of questioning was going to be.
Yeah, but Shay, you're not gonna agree to do something, just like I agreed to do this interview. You're not going to agree to do an interview, and you're not going to agree to do something and then be upset when somebody comes at you in a indirect way or direct way or whatever you want to call it. When you agree to do an interview, whatever is going to come out of it is going to come out of it. Bottom line.
But I will say this, and we're going to move on. I will say this. Mm-hmm. When you came to do this interview today, you knew in your heart that I was going to ask you something about that situation. But in the back of your mind, you also knew that I was going to handle you.
No, wait.
You're going to tell me that somebody that you know for X
Shay,
amount of
years. You know why?
Listen,
I'm going to tell you why. Because ultimately, no matter how you or any other interviewer are going to come at me, it's up to me to come back in a way to where you can come as hard as you want or as laid back as you want. But how I come back at you is going to decipher how I take the direct questioning from you. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, but I don't agree with you. And that's all right, what I'm saying.
All right, move on.
Yeah, I don't agree with you.
Move on.
But anyway, yeah, like I said, I don't like what he did. Anyway, a lot of people after this incident, like I said, I don't like how they handled you, but there was other people in this industry that handled you differently as well.
Right.
I want to talk about how people in this industry treated you after that. Like, who was riding, and, you know, feel free to say who or who wasn't, and who wasn't. Like, what was it like after all of that went down?
As far as from the industry, you know, I got... The majority, I got more support than dislike about the situation. But, you know, I would say the people that kind of stood out the most, you know, Hove, you know, I just actually put something up on Instagram a week or two ago about a gesture that Hove, you know, something that Hove did for me during my time.
What is your relationship with Hove?
I would say I have a great relationship with Hove. You know what I mean? You know,
define great.
Great?
Yeah.
I would say that if there was a situation where you know whether we, if we
he was hungry
If either one of us needed each other for something, we would be there for each other. So I would say that's a great relationship.
You been in his house?
No, but
it's
90,
a question. 90, it's a question. No, but relax.
But this is the music industry. 95% of the people that you have great relationships with in the music industry, you ain't going to no fucking Thanksgiving dinner.
I didn't say that you did. It was just a question.
Okay.
Why you wasn't jumping down fucking Ebro's throat when he was fucking putting you on the fucking sideline? Why you wasn't jumping down his throat when he was like, answer right now. This is your chance.
Well, you also have to remember, when I did... The difference of when I did the Ebro interview to now is that I'm more comfortable in my skin now.
Okay.
So, you know, back then I wasn't as comfortable in my skin as far as what I was doing and so on and so forth. So, you know, of course there's going to be some me being uncomfortable because I wasn't really fully there to even come to grips with telling the truth about what I was doing. Because if you remember, back in 2011, I was lying about the whole situation.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying?
I don't understand, honestly, just for critically speaking, why you was lying. I mean, if that was your fetish,
the main reason why, because I'm gonna tell you, let's just cut to the chase.
All right, go.
The main reason why I lied when it first happened in 2011 is because first and foremost, I was trying to protect my family. I take care of my family, my grandmother and my aunt, and I really felt like if I would have told the truth at that particular time, that I was gonna risk losing, you know, promoters or client people that work with me, and you know, my money wouldn't been coming in right. I wouldn't, you know what I mean? So on and so forth. So that's why I lied.
This concludes part one of my interview with Mr. C. Check out part two as the conversation continues. What's that?